hold on. There's a second row? Austin asked. Of course, I responded, and handed Austin down another handful of books. We were moving the top shelves of books from my father's library so we could do some much-needed repair work to the room. It took the better part of the day to unload the bookcases that were shelved too deep. You realize, of course, that my parents bought this house for the bookshelf space, I said to Austin. He reflected for a moment, drinking in the floor-to-ceiling custom-built cases that lined the walls of the room, and perhaps thinking about their mates in other parts of the house, and then answered, I believe it. No, really, I remember going to look at houses with them, and realtors would point at one wall in a garage as potential bookshelf space, and my mother would laugh. My father had a paper route when he was young, and one of the customers he had to collect subscription money from had a home library. It was something he had never seen or imagined before, growing up in a house with only one book in it, the Bible. The man lent Daddy a copy of Thomas Wolfe's Look Homeward, Angel. After he returned it, the man continued lending him other books. And soon the idea of building his own home library took root, and it became a passion that he devoted much of his life to. I always just accepted as a given that whatever novels I needed for school and many nonfiction books, my parents would have copies of at home. But more than that, each book came with their own relationships and opinions. So, for example, when I had to read Fanny Burney's Evelina for a class in college, my mother was incensed, and went on at great length on the topic. Why, if one was assigning an epistolary novel, would one choose Evelina? There were far more significant, important, and well-written epistolary novels. If you wanted to assign Fanny Burney, why not assign her account of her mastectomy, which she was awake throughout and described in great written detail? Now that would be significant and important. And so on and so on. Or perhaps, more interesting, when I came home with a copy of Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas, my dad appeared at my bedroom door about an hour later with his hands full of Rolling Stone magazine, commenting, if you're going to read it, you might as well read it in the original magazine. And then later that night at dinner, he launched into a soliloquy about form driving narrative and the difference between the magazine publication and collected book form. And that, I realize, is one of the gifts of the library, the collected knowledge that came with it. Yes, every book was read by someone in the family, and my parents knew when and where every book had been acquired. The books they bought each other in college, on trips, as gifts, or just because Daddy was downtown on Thursday and at a bookstore. The shelves tell the story of our family life and my father's professional life. Two cases are filled with books about American oratory, rhetoric, political and religious speechmaking, and various studies of Emerson, George Wallace, and Brisbane, with little slips of paper marking various pages. Austin gives me a quizzical look, and I point to another shelf containing the biographies of those men that Daddy wrote. Austin nods in comprehension and asks if these books need to go somewhere specific in the game of life-size Tetris we were playing. No, just stacked in the dining room will be fine, I answer. We're slowly filling up available floor space with roughly thigh-high piles of books everywhere, but the plaster work has to be done to keep the shelves from pulling off the walls. And as I recount the stories for Austin, I feel at home in a way I haven't in years. Ensconced in this legacy of conversation, ideas, and ideals that make my parents' voices still live.